paid out us 15 and then 15 and 30 or something like that. And what he found was that the only place where, so if he looks just at the albedo bosons, he gets on like spectrum and he sees like a little bump around 130. It's not huge significance, but that he really only sees this bump if you look at incidence angles that are between, I think it was like 40 and 30. So for some very strange reason that nobody really understands, it looks like this effect is coming from a very narrow range of incidence, photons coming in at a particular incidence angle on the detector.
That's for the albedo signal, not the...
Yeah, just for the albedo signal. So what Doug has then done is we did his analysis cutting out all photons coming in at this angle, since that's where it looks like the systematic is dominating. And he still sees the signal and something like the signal, slightly less significant. Now, ideally, what you want is the collaboration. Well, A, for the collaboration to do this analysis, you know, make some final point on this. And also, they have apparently a much larger data set on albedo photons from their initial calibration one that's like tens of days or something. And so they haven't made that public, and Doug was saying they're not going to release that until like maybe September. But that should be a lot more data. And so if you go and look at it for this there, that would be really, really good. Yeah, it's been frustrating. There have been a lot of papers that have been coming out on this using the public data, but the collaboration has been very tight-lipped in terms of...
Well, it's lose-lose for that panel, right?
Huh?
It's lose-lose for that panel, right?
I
they either sink a lot of time into killing it, or they verify someone else's discovery.
yeah. So, and it sounds like they may not... I mean, they're doing this analysis now, but they're saying it's probably not going to come out until... Earliest
October,
probably later than that. So it's
going to
be a while, I think, before we hear something very specific
from
them,
which
is unfortunate.
Do you know how much they're testing data to help sort out what the systematic is?
So I haven't thought about that much specifically, but I just know from talking with Doug, he seemed to say that was going to be like the critical test.
Testing? Okay.
The testing?
Yeah. I mean, like,
this
didn't say. No, I mean, like, they did the same thing that, well, I don't know what you mean by calibration run, but every particle detector, including Fermi, before they put it wherever it's supposed to go, they put it in some test beam, which was just directly shining a low-intensity beam of different types at the detector.
Oh, I don't know.
Which is
actually
essential to calibrating the energy response. So it would be interesting to know what some of the people who actually, you know, do the calorimetry on Fermi think that could shed light on it. But
yeah.
If you haven't heard from any of them, then it's an unfair question.
Yeah, I have no idea. The one thing I heard Simona Murgia apparently looked at all the photons that seem to be showing up in this.
Okay.
And this passes through there. So they have like a way of simulating what the photons look like when they hit the detector.
Uh-huh.
And she says she's looked at them and there isn't anything sort of obviously weird about any of the particular photons. It's not like all of them are hitting in like a particular region of the detector, or, you know, off to the side or someplace where they know that there's some problem with the detector. So there isn't on first glance something that's sort of obviously wrong with it. But they obviously need to look at it a little more. So yeah.
Why don't you tell us about what
you
want to tell us about?
Oh, okay, yeah, sure. So this is the result from the line. So what we did was to think about, let's say this is coming from dark matter. Is there an additional signal that we'd expect that would also be, that we could look for that would be associated with this line?
Actually, before
yes.
We just leave the general thing, so during a couple of days ago, someone was saying there's also a line at 100.
Oh,
right.
I'm going to add I got one thing on that. So in particular, what you'd expect is to see photons coming from continuum annihilation. So, for example, you're going to get monochromatic photons if you have the direct decay of the dark matter to the photons, but then you can also have just annihilation of the standard model final states that end up showering and producing photons from the showering process of those, let's say the W's or the P's or whatever is produced. And so you can look for you know, what they found was evidence that it's Lyme. What you can look for is any possible evidence for a continuum, and then see if that, you know, see what that might imply about any dark matter models that are giving you the signal. So that's what we did with the public data. So essentially, what had been done before by Doug and Winokur was to look in this narrow region at really high energies. And so, you know, all of their analysis and their statistics was coming from points between here and here. But where you'd expect the continuum contribution to come from is at much lower energies. So we had to go back in and redo the analysis. But we went down as far as about 5 GeV. So we looked at 3 degrees around the galactic center, masked out to the inner degree, because there's a lot of point source contribution and things like that there. And then did our analysis going all the way down here. So this is just where you look at the WW continuum, just to give you a sense for why we went down in energy.
This point source is outside the inner degree too. This point source is outside the inner degree also.
So that's why the only reason I was stopped at 5. Just figured below 5 GeV, there would be a lot more contamination from that. You don't want to go in that area. Also,
it mentions more precisely what the signal is actually, where the signal actually is. The signal was found in the inner 5 GeV.
And so you can see, even just looking from the spectrum, you know, by eye, that it seems to be modeled really well by just a falling power law plus a peak. I'll show you the plots that we get from our final analysis on it, but it essentially comes down to the fact that there's very little room for a continuum background and then for a continuum contribution. And so we find that if this is something that's coming from a dark matter signal, it can't have very strong annihilation of WWCC. And as I'll show later on, that actually excludes the neutrally known as a possible explanation for this line.
What's the power? Is it understood kind of what that power is?
So there are some measurements in the local neighborhood from Mela on what that power law should be. Whether or not it's the same thing at the galactic center, I don't know if that's what very well understood. We did two different analyses. One where we were taking the assumption that you can explain the background of the falling power law, and another one is completely independent of that.
Did you also look at data clean?
Data. This is ultra clean.
No, so then.
You mean source data?
No, there's ultra clean. There's a clean. Sorry, there's clean. There's source. Did you look at clean?
No, we looked at we were only looking at ultra clean. Right, so then there was a question about the two lines. Somebody asked about whether or not this can be coming from two lines. And so the reason why that's interesting is because so you can have say a gamma gamma line at 130 and then a gamma z line at 115. Or you can have gamma z at 130 equal gamma gamma at 145. So most models that will give you both gamma z and gamma gamma will typically have the cross section of gamma z be larger than gamma gamma, but you can model build that way. But this is typically the case in the MSSM. So we did do an analysis trying to see if there was what the evidence was for two lines. Because if you have two lines in the signal, then it becomes a lot more convincing as a potential dark matter candidate. What this is showing is, this is the dark matter mass here, and on the vertical axis is this angle that's just the arctangent of the ratio of the number of photons going into gamma z over gamma gamma. So essentially at zero here means that all of your photons are going into a gamma gamma line, and pi over two means that everything is going into gamma z instead. And anything in the middle means that you have some contribution from both. You have evidence that you have more than one line. So the best fit point that we find when we do our analysis is zero, meaning that this is just one line at 130 GeV. But the contours show the 1 sigma, 2 sigma, and 3 sigma regions around that. And I think it's pretty clear that within 2 sigma, pretty much any ratio is allowed. So in Doug's analysis, he finds that the two lines are preferred by some small significance over one line.
I mean, you can sort of see it by eye.
You can. So this is essentially, it's coming from this, that's what's giving you the power in that fit.
I think the first book you had where it's linear scale is actually easier to see. Yeah. You can, there it is.
Yeah, his thin sizes are bigger here than what we take, but yeah, it's that little fluctuation there that's giving you power. But I think one thing that you can tell is that there's a lot of bouncing around there, and I think that's just why the fit is so poor. And so, I mean, that's why we're essentially finding if you could kind of do anything there.
But it's supposed to bounce around. I mean, those are
big
error bars.
Yeah. It's just there's big error bars, and it's consistent to put a gamma z line there if you want within 1 or 2 sigma. So, yeah. Something like that, you definitely need a lot more data to be able to say something like that.
Definitely, even before you saw the data, you could have said, I'm going to put a line and 2 sigma. Anywhere you want it. Because you would expect a few of these 2 sigma ups and downs.
Oh, yeah.
By default.
Yeah. So this was.
Well, I mean, I think that's not quite right, right? Because if you look, for example, at the other option of 145 versus 130, that option is much more, much less. It's much harder to believe that option. Because at 145, there's really nothing happening.
Isn't that the blue thing at the top of the point?
Yeah,
that was attributing it entirely to the gamma and Z line.
Yeah.
Right.
It's the same signal.
But wouldn't that be the case where you're not seeing 145 and you're only seeing 130 as the lower digit?
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I was reading it. Blue.
So the one up at the top is essentially you have your peak at 130 and it's coming entirely from gamma.
And you're just not seeing anything.
And you're not seeing anything on 145, so all of your photons
are okay. Because there's really, the 145, we really don't see anything.
Yeah, so.
So that, the significance of this thing includes the fact that we're not seeing something 145.
Right.
Yeah.
So, sorry, Ita, what you're saying is basically just that the light blue region underneath the 145
right.
peak is a lot longer
right.
than the light blue region above the 130.
Sorry,
we're
reading
the light
blue region.
I mean,
are you talking about the area covered by this?
So that goes the other way.
No.
Right. But I mean, if you look at that, it looks like if you have a 130 GeV line from gamma Z and you try to add some gamma gamma, which would be at 140, it's relatively easy to do that compared to starting with something that's mostly at 130 from gamma gamma and adding a gamma Z line. At lower energies, that seems to be more disfavored.
But yeah, but I mean, you already at that point, you already very there's very little gamma gamma, right? I agree with you. It would make more sense if this one was going this way.
But the gamma z has to be smaller. Right? There is a kilometers.
Yeah.
Right. So that, I mean, at this plot, you look at it, and you go, well. It could be a line at 130 of the same significance that could be one at like 142 or something like that. Right?
No, well, those are dark matter masses. Both of these cases correspond to lines at 130.
Yeah.
Right?
There's a question of where is the other line? This one corresponds to the other line being 115.
Yeah.
This one corresponds to the other line being 145.
And it looks like it's easier to, for this plot, it looks like it's easier to add a line at 145
right.
than at 115.
But I'm not sure how to convolve this plot to give the data. At least if you look at the data, at 145 is much more quiet than 115.
Yeah,
and
there's a distinction.
But.
Yeah, even when I agree with plot.
But.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, as Manoj said, at this point, you can interpret almost every point.
Yeah, if you stare at this too long, you start seeing lines everywhere.
The ghost
forest. The forest.
Tomorrow.
Only one.
Okay, yeah, so then, so we also looked at what the contribution would be, let's say you had your dark matter go into WWT bar, UMU, or TAPOW. And so the nice thing here is because you have a line signal, so then you can just find the ratio here of the contribution from the continuum relative to the contribution from the line. And when you look at this ratio, any of the uncertainties from the actual physics backgrounds about the density distribution of the dark matter and anything like that just cancels out. Because essentially, if you do the ratio of the flux, so you have an integral up here of rho squared dr here, and then rho squared dr here, and it just cancels. So we can get a very model-dependent constraint on the continuum contribution. We can just compare it directly to what we see for the line. So just to get a sense for what this ratio should be, let's say in the MSSM. So these are the numbers for Nino and Zeno and Vino. So let's see. So in the Vino case, the ratio is about 210. It's much lower than the other ones because the gamma Z contribution is about an order of magnitude larger than the Vino's. In the Zeno case, it's around 700. Vino case is even larger. But one thing to note is that in the Vino case, this cross section for the gamma gamma line is too small. It can't explain the data, so you don't even really consider the Vinos that much. It's just they don't work. So the question is whether or not, let's say, the Vino or Vino with this relative ratio of the annihilation contribution to the gamma gamma contributions are allowed. So the model is an independent way of doing this without making any assumptions of the background. So this is sort of the most, this is kind of like the first back of the envelope thing we did, was to say, let's say we think about WW contribution, we're going to expect the WW to dominate over the background in this particular energy range here. So let's make the assumption that all the photons we measure in that bin are coming from dark matter annihilation, that there's no background. So it's the most conservative thing. Assume everything there is coming from dark matter, and then you count up all the photons that are your peak, and you say all those are coming from gamma gamma, and you just take the ratio of the two. So no assumptions on the background there, really. So this is the exclusion curve that we get for WW and VZ when we do this. So the ratio is on the vertical axis, and the dark matter mass is on the horizontal axis. And so this bound can be, it's pretty much like 80, the ratio can be like 80, has to be 80 and below. And so if you remember that for the Vino, the ratio was 200, and the Xeno it was like 700, so that's the most boneheaded thing you could do with the data, just clearly ruled out those two cases. You might ask what happens if you have some more complicated mix like Vino, Xeno, Vino state, so there, where it's not just pure Vino, pure Xeno. And so we did even a scan using Garcuzzi of all possible combinations of fractions of Xeno and Xeno components. And pretty much all of this is just like a plot of all possible mixtures that we did in the scan. And everything was above 200. So I think it's pretty clear that it's just dead. Like if you want to explain this line,
And you haven't taken out the galactic background,
nothing. We just counted the number of photons. Yeah. So the constraint is probably even a lot tighter than this. This is, like I said, the most boneheaded thing you could do is just count up all the photons that are there.
I mean, even at 10 GeV, there are point sources that are there.
Yeah.
So
we haven't put in, IC, even storage complement contribution, any of that stuff. So yeah. We did do the constraint again. This one's a little bit more model dependent, but now where we actually do a fit for the shapes. So where we put in the line shape, we put in the shape of the continuum, and made the assumption that the background is just a power law over this full range. And then we fit the different shapes and see what the constraint is when we account for the shapes of the distribution. This does rely on the assumption that you can model the background as a parallel of the whole range. When we do this, the constraint gets even tighter. The ratio has to be less than 10. Remember before it was had to be less than 80. So it's about a factor of 8 tighter than we.
And this is 5 GeV and higher?
5 GeV and higher. Yeah. So this even, I mean, this rules out that we really know more tightly.
Or is it mostly because of the annihilations into BB bar?
Yeah, so the constraints are tight. So this is tight for here. We looked at BB bar when we went to Tau as well. And so BB bar is also really, it's a really tight constraint. But if you look at like Tau, it's a little bit weaker, and mu is also a little bit.
So like for example, Higgs, that also rules out Higgs in space.
Well, what's the ratio for Higgs in space? I forget the.
Well, the Higgs will depend most of the time in BB bar.
It's W W across
the space, right? And then, yeah, then I guess it would be the constraints for BB bar are pretty much indistinguishable from the W W.
Wait,
say again? The constraints on the
6E
cross section is the same
thing. Yeah, so I mean, well, so that this is the constraint on BB bar, right? It's less than 10, and then. This is what it is for WWPZ. I think they are pretty much the same. I think it's both end up giving a lot of time. So. So the general statement that I think you can make is even being more general than sort of. So I explained that this sort of rules out the neutralino, but you can make an even more general statement, which is just that if you any dark matter theory where you have annihilation to W, W, and Z at tree level, and to gamma, and gamma Z at loop level, is pretty much ruled out if you want to use that as an explanation for the dark matter line.
Let's qualify this a little bit. I mean, if you have something that is coupled to hyperchar, right?
Yes.
Then the ratio of gamma-gamma to Cc will be tangent theta lambda in the force power.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't, that goes below 1/10. I mean, it's order 1/10.
Sorry, so you say you have some SP2 charge in the loop?
No, no. So let's take like this galactic dark matter, for example.
Yeah.
So you really require a higher charge.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, but then you're not going to be getting WW.
No, but you're getting. I thought the statement just made that it needs CZ.
Yes, even if it's CZ.
No, but I'm saying like there are models where you have tree level CZ, but suppressed by Weinberg angle.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's a good point.
Okay.
So that it's not, when you have just the loop versus the tree here and take the ratio, if you do it naively, it's about like 10 to the 5,
right?
The ratio.
But if I tree at the tree level I'm allowed to gamma gamma,
mm-hmm.
right, by hyperchar invariance, I should also have a tree level to CC.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry, but you're saying that the gamma gamma is also coming from the tree level.
Right.
Yeah, then it's different. Yeah. Yeah, no, this is more of a statement that if you have something going from loops,
right.
Loops to gamma gamma
right.
versus tree to W W to Z, then it's
different.
Yeah. The other thing that was also kind of interesting, well, it's not interesting at this point, but may become more interesting, is the constraint on the ratio of gamma z to zz, because right now that's order 10. But if with more data that becomes order 1, then that's an even bigger model building challenge. It was kind of hard to imagine a scenario where you go to zz but not to gamma z.
Yeah, the real problem is that in most of those MZM models, you produce the gamma gamma through the loop.
Yeah, and that's why.
So now we have to produce three of them.
Yeah, so now this is just it's something that anybody who wants to model build. So this would be to keep in mind, it's just this constraint. It's interesting that even just to make something really pre model dependent enough, being that makes sense. Constraints are just very strong. mean, I guess so now people are looking, have tried looking for this line in galaxy clusters. And there was one paper claiming pH sigma signals against for seeing it, but it's not a particularly strong signal.
Is this white?
Sorry?
No, I think it's, forget its name. They were among the first groups to also find this in the, like, verified
that. Oh, Wright Bell was on it?
Huh?
Wasn't Wright Bell on it?
But in their original papers, they also found a few spurious places, and then they retracted them. I forget the name.
No, I remember it. Think about you thinking what is this movie drawn or something.
Oh, really?
Or, yeah, essentially.
There was,
oh,
the
list
through the
title
of the second
piece. Wait, which one?
The published
version.
Yeah, he's talking about this island, Pablo's friend, and kind of like that,
But I think they didn't realize that there was some other point sources in that region. So,
at the level of constraints, it's still wrong.
Right.
At the level of detection,
right.
Spain is completely
different. Yeah, and there was also, John had a paper out, I guess a week ago, where they claimed to see this in the unassociated point sources in the Fermi catalog. So they looked at, I guess, any unassociated source that had a photon above 100. It's kind of intriguing. I mean, when you showed this plot at IDF, it's kind of impressive. Like, it's the falling spectrum, and then you have two lines, one at 111 and the other one at 130, right where you want them to be. And then if you look at the associated sources, it's gone. So this was about a three sigma, what they think to be three sigma detection. Dan Cooper had a paper out today saying that wasn't. I'm still trying to understand that paper, but so I think there's something. The signal is it's not anything you would trust on its own, unless you also have
this. I think Andy Hector is the other Hector company.
Oh, on that paper, that was cluster paper. Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately, Fermi needs to weigh at some point otherwise.
So in the shape analysis that you did,
yeah.
you meant that you assumed something on the background power law?
We just assumed that the background was power law.
And then the signal is whatever it is, your simulation, whatever dark signal you use from that perspective.
Yeah, we used
it here,
but yeah, so the continuum was essentially the shape of the from Vidya. The background was a falling power law where we fit the power. And then the line signal here, we were modeling using the Fermi science sources.
So I think that kills exit space as well.
If it's, I haven't fully, yeah, I mean, if it's EV5, then it's useful.
Because there I thought that you produce a Higgs, and then the two photon decay gives you like a spread, which interpreted the long theory.
Right.
But the ranking ratio, I think,
so their point there was that WW and CT, that they don't get very much WW and CT, right?
No, but they don't get the
bar. Yeah, the bar, and if they don't get the bar, then they'll also. Yeah.
The other thing with this business is if you look at the 130, if you look at the 100 plus GeV photons in the map, they don't really look like it's coming from any central region. Like most of those analysis, you just average over, right? I mean, like what you're doing, very conservative thing, don't worry about the shape, just look at the energy spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
But if it was dark matter, you would assume that most of them actually come from closer to the center, or it's like spherically distributed.
Oh, okay.
And it doesn't.
Yeah, so in Doug's analysis, they find it's offset from the dark center.
But you also average it. He also has a Gaussian. I mean, his model is like a couple of degrees, right? It's like a Gaussian width.
Yeah.
If you just look at the photons, I mean, they should really be just the angular resolution you have 100 GeV. you should really be able to see that it's like statistically distributed. You know,
yeah, there aren't that many photons that are in the line.
It's 40, 50, right?
No, when you look at it, it's 30-ish,
20, 30-ish. Yeah, but even 30, I mean, I looked at those photons, then, you know, you can see the, there's like a disky thing, there's some blue.
Yeah, I think the part that was also, yeah, before I do the fact that it seems to be offset. Mike Coolin is doing an analysis now, I think using errors to try to see whether or not there's any evidence for simulations that you can have the dark matter be offset from the galactic center by some amount.
I'm just saying something different.
I mean, that statement comes after you smear them out and all those things.
Yeah.
But it's saying that just look at the raw data.
Look at them.
The raw data, you know, it seems a little too spread.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like this and then like a bloom there. And so.
Bloom where? Sorry. What else?
Like, I forget what it was. I mean, it's a there. But it sort of looks more. To my eyes, it looks like a disky thing and then two things going off. It looks more like, you know, it doesn't look, it looks more like it's scattered around the disk and there's like a slight plume. And I'm talking really just in, you know, 5 degrees.
Okay.
Where if it was dark matter, that's probably where you would expect most of
the right. Where's the plume?
Plume's like 2 or 3 degrees to the side.
Oh, well, that plume is probably the thing that's giving them greater significance with the offset, right?
Probably.
Excellent.
So if you're averaging over it, then, you know, I don't know what that offset really means. I'm just saying, I mean, you know, if I had enough time, I would ask the question, given this, so 30 photons, how consistent is it from, you know, being statistically, like, spherically distributed, or not from a disk?
Do you really want to do something else with 30 photons?
Well, there's a 5 sigma detection with this, right?
Your square root is, huge.
Yeah, but if you assume there's a line at 130, I mean, I think you can still ask the question, how significant is it, right? That you would get something that, it just depends on the actual distribution, right? The actual distribution is like really along the line. Then even 10 photons is enough to say that, you know, you're not sampling a spherically symmetric distribution.
No, but I mean, first of all, not all the photons are coming from 1/3, right? It's 1/3 is right and over some.
Yeah.
Not even all those photons are our signal. And 30 photons.
No. Well, we do the fit. It's about 30 photons accounting for
the signal. That's not on top of how much back matter that that's going to
be. I don't remember off the top of my head, and you can estimate it knowing what the power law is.
I don't think it's more than a factor. It's like the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is most of it is
signal. Yeah, you can. I mean, imagine if you were to just adjust the power law, right? So,
right.
It's essentially just backing out this.
Right. So if it's 5 sigma, then it's 25 photons.
<There you go>. Yeah, but sorry, but your argument, let's say, because you do see this plume, right? Can't you just say, your argument wouldn't hold if for some reason, and I'm not saying that this is necessarily the obvious explanation for it, but for some reason the dark matter, the center of the dark matter halo does not match the center of the...
No, it's still called, but I mean, you would shift it, but why would you get something like...
You would shift it, but so long as it's somewhat symmetric about the plume, right?
I mean, I should just show you the data before
okay.
explaining it well, but in L, that, I mean, you know, it looks like that, like a couple of degrees off, there's like a few photons like that, but I mean, it's still a pretty big blob, but it doesn't really mean anything like that. So I might have data somewhere.
But why is it the spectral symmetric?
But if you think it's dark matter, then not so at least, you know, it should look fairly regular, you know, and not trace the disk, right?
Isn't there a time that dark matter is?
No, but
that's if you have.
Yeah, we're not going to relax.
That's the speculative metaphysics physics to a layer.
It's true.
Is this similar to what you did? This is essentially just floating on down.
Yeah, I didn't. But that ship might be, you know, that actually might be the moon like thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that is the moon.
In which case, they shouldn't.
They should be what?
They shouldn't be really interpreting it as...
I don't think you can see a blooming with 25 photons. That's...
You'd be surprised what you can see. If you stare long enough.
But you can find constellations and like, giant blocking space. Exactly.
So are there more questions that we can actually answer without having 10 times more data? Well, if not, let's thank Mariangela for...